We are faced, I think, with the approach of what may be called the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, where a man can act directly on the mind-body of his fellows. Well, needless to say, some kind of direct action on human mind-bodies has been going on since the beginning of time. But this has generally been of a violent nature. The techniques of terrorism have been known from time immemorial, and people have employed them with more or less ingenuity, sometimes with the utmost crudity, sometimes with a good deal of skill acquired by a process of trial and error, finding out what the best ways of using torture, imprisonment, by any decent standard, they ought not to enjoy.
You're correct. Aldous Huxley. Brave New World. So, we're living in a totalitarian state. We're living with modern-day sociopathic fascists. We're living where everything that Orwell said we should pay attention to, we're not. And that concerns us. Who was it, Voltaire, who said that if you want to know who's in control of your life, just look at the person you're not allowed to criticize. So we're not allowed to criticize the woke movement. We're not allowed to criticize anything about elections, the integrity of them. We're not allowed to criticize the corruption within every government agency and all the private contractors. We're not allowed to criticize our foreign adventures. We're not allowed to criticize science. In fact, today, science is the final arbiter of all things. So Anthony Fauci stands supreme. And yet, as Robert Kennedy has said on yesterday's program, that he met with Bill Gates in private, Bill Gates' vast estate out in Washington, and planned how they could, in effect, vaccinate the world. Well, look how far they've come. And you know that special pandemic test they had? Well, they've done over 20 of those. Now, you can agree or disagree with that. But Kennedy is not known for doing things by half measure. In point of fact, he also, his group, just won a major victory against the telecom industry and the FCC by showing that the 5G dangers were real. And so that surprised the industry. Everyone thought that Kennedy's group would lose. No, they've won a major battle there. He'll come on the program hopefully in the near future and discuss that. So today I'm going to spend some time on, have we become so complacent and filled with hubris and indifference and have numbed our capacity for empathy for not just those in America but around the world, that we just look at everything as if it has a disconnect from us? It shouldn't. Everything is interconnected. So after health and nutrition, which I'm going to go into depth on, a special commentary, and then a few insights from others on this topic. For example, one of the world's leading authorities on how governments and corporations hire the best minds they can find to create a false dialogue, but one that you will believe in. And in fact, you'll believe in it with such a fervent passion, you'll begin to hate those who are not in alignment with you. Like, you'll hate the unvaccinated. And that's what's happening now. So they're very clever in what they're doing. And we will push back with reason, scholarship, common sense. So let us begin by going to the latest on health and healing. A grain, was actually in the rhubarb family, but it's buckwheat. And it helps the house cleaning of the cells. This is from Osaka University in Japan. Researchers find that quercetin, that's Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, a component of buckwheat extract, promotes the degradation of harmful protein aggregates in your cells. Seeds like quinoa and amaranth and buckwheat that have been used for centuries in traditional cuisines are having a trendy movement in culinary circles as alternatives to wheat and other grains. Now researchers from Japan have found that a traditional liquor made from buckwheat could even be used medicinally. In a study published last month in the peer-reviewed journal Antioxidants, researchers at Osaka University revealed that an ingredient in Chinese buckwheat, which contains various herbal elements, can induce autophagy. Now, auto, A-U-T-O, phagy, P-H-A-G-Y, that's a simple process where cells, in effect, clean up degraded proteins that are damaging, if not, and that are no longer needed. So it's like, just imagine flushing a toilet. That's what it does to your cell to get rid of the debris. Autophagy plays a very crucial role in diseases like cancer and Alzheimer's, so finding a way to encourage this process is a topic of considerable interest. In fact, the people I work with who have different conditions, I always start by first cleansing the body, because almost always, whatever they're sick with, it is from lifestyle of having the wrong things that have accumulated until there's a tipping, and the tipping may be a stroke or a diagnosis of a diabetes or a heart attack. So you don't go in with a healing protocol. You go in with a cleansing protocol. And autophagy is a central part of that. And depending upon how toxic a person is, it may take months, might even take a year or more. But once it happens, the body begins the capacity for rejuvenation. And that's what we want. Then you can use other protocols. So this is what it is. So that's good that there's now one more thing that can help us. But it's the quercetin that's in there that makes the difference. And so I'm suggesting, why not just take quercetin every day? Because quercetin is what helps drive zinc into the cell if you have viruses. And it's the zinc in the cell that really does the job. That's also true for ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. With zinc and quercetin, that's why it's a good combination. From University of Western Australia, the greater vitamin K intake associated with lower risk of hospitalization for cardiovascular disease. What do I mean? In new research, they found that eating a diet rich in vitamin K, there's your kale and spinach, for example, your greens in particular, can lower the risk of atherosclerosis-related cardiovascular disease. That means that your blood vessels that are nourishing the heart are going to be put at risk. But if you're eating right, it won't be. And this was published in the Journal of the American Heart Association. They looked at 50,000 people, and they looked at them over 20 years. And sure enough, those who had the green leafy vegetables and vegetable oils and fermented foods like yogurts and kefir and miso and sauerkraut and kimchi, they were able to have less risk of cardiovascular disease and hospitalization. One more reason to do your juicing, because you're getting your vitamin K, 1 and 2, from that also. Also, if you feel burnt out, one supplement that can help you is rhodiola, rosea, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, R-O-S-E-A. It can help. This is from Wien University Medical School in Austria. Now, it's easy to get rhodiola. It's an extract, and it can improve symptoms of being just burned out. And it's botanical, and this was an open-label, multi-center, single-arm trial, and it showed very positive effects. And this was published in the Neuropsychiatry Disease and Treatment Journal. So we have a lot of things that can make a difference in our lives. 400 milligrams a day of rhodiola extract, it's just one more thing that can help us. NAD, and L-carnitine, coenzyme Q10, together as a combination, That'll give you more energy. That's important. I've also recommended that to individuals who are having problems with libido in both men and women, and it improves the increased sexual interest and functioning. After all, if your libido is gone and your desire is gone, then you're not going to be enjoying sexual activity as you desire. So if it's something that can help you, like, you know, having nitric oxide in the form of beet juice, and which is also prebiotic and also pomegranate, then include those things. There's no downside to it. And this was from the American Botanical Council. So, by the way, there's over 140 chemical compounds in the roots of rhodiola, including phenols and roseraceae and rosin, roseraceae, organic acids, terpenoids, and these are all different types of offshoots of flavonoids. And it is really good, very important. Also, from Chinese University of Hong Kong, published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, regular exercise can lower your risk of death. So that's very important. When you can exercise on a daily basis and reduce your risk of death from natural causes, you got to be habitual, meaning you got to do it on a regular basis, not just episodically. Don't just be a weekend warrior. Do it on a daily basis. It can save your life. That's what this shows. And finally, from Toho University in Japan, an article published in the International Heart Journal, that 100 milligrams of resveratrol compared to a placebo for 12 weeks show that you're going to have more pliable, flexible arteries. That can really help you. This was a double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial. So arterial stiffness is in part due to oxidative stress. And then think of the people who don't realize because they don't feel it, they don't see it, there's no warning until you have a heart attack or stroke. So take resveratrol. I would suggest if you really want to have healthy heart and healthy vessels, healthy endothelium, go up to 500 milligrams a day. You might start with 100 milligrams in the morning, etc. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. Now, when we come back from the break, we're going to go directly to the trust the science. That's what we're told every day. Trust the science. Okay. Which science are they referring to? Because the only people I've had on this program are scientists and physicians. These are orthodox, but orthodox fighting orthodox. So we're going to hear a little bit of an introduction to this from James Corbett, and then I'll share some really good information, original information on the corruption of science in the United States. I think it's worth listening to. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Massive experiment worldwide.
And that is... Where's the guinea pigs?
Maybe. The experiment is, will people listen to scientists?
Trust the science.
Follow the science and follow the evidence. You know, listen to the experts.
We follow the science.
I trust the science, and I certainly am going to trust those experts.
Trust the science and get on with it.
I trust the scientists.
Follow the science.
The science is evolving, the science is moving, and we are following the science each and every day.
Yes, I'm going to share that different window with you in a moment, but I'm going to introduce you to someone now, Dr. Piers Robinson. And he's going to talk about COVID being a global propaganda operation. Now, mind you, there's an extensive introduction. The whole clip is only 4 minutes long. But I want you to know this is a really mainstream, highly respected person, and there's no controversy around him, but he's telling you that everything coming out now has been orchestrated, manipulated, so that, remember, at the beginning, the people begin to love their servitude. Well, when you get the same message over and over and over again from people that you trust, and they're all speaking with one voice, a complete consensus, this is the truth, this is the truth, this is the truth, nothing else, don't believe any of that other stuff, then you're likely to believe it. And as a result, then one day, if you are asked, well, did you do your homework? What do I have to do the homework for? Well, because, you know, there's a lot of misinformation going on out there. Well, I'm not aware of that misinformation. You're not. Do you know the truth about everything that's being spoon-fed to you? Yeah, I mean, I trust what I read. Okay, so you know that the top fact-checker of all things orthodox and all things alternative, who didn't find anything legitimate and alternative and everything orthodox and vaccines, mandates, was all legitimate, was Snopes. So, that's David Muckelson, often writing under a pseudonym, and, quote, U.S. News and Real Report, it was also in the New York Times, quote, Snopes retracts dozens of articles after a review finds co-founder plagiarized. Quote, a fact-checking website has retracted at least 54 articles after finding its co-founder and CEO repeatedly plagiarizing content from other websites. Okay, so the mainstream media in a circular firing squad used Scopes to prove that if you were saying something against Fauci in the COVID, you were wrong, and you were then to be attacked. Well, now the person who is doing all that has been shown to be a plagiarizer. And if they've found 54 articles that he's plagiarized, how many more have they not found? So are they going to attack him? Are they going to say, don't use him? And by the way, wasn't it Peter Daszak, who we didn't know was the fact checker for Google on vaccines? And was he not also the same person who met and had an agreement with Mark Zuckerberg to be the fact checker for vaccine information on Facebook? Yeah, same person. Is that the same Peter Daszak that got money from Anthony Fauci and then went over to the University of North Carolina? And isn't that also where they were doing gain-of-function research and then took that over to the Wuhan lab? Same one. Isn't that the one who went on the behalf of the World Health Organization to look for the truth about the origins of COVID and came back and said it must have been natural? Same one. Isn't that the same one in emails that are completely unredacted now showing that he had been using and knew about gain-of-function research and Anthony Fauci had denied? Same one. Wow. So that means all the people who are fact-checking for the establishment are not people who are honest or objective. So that's just to give you an idea of how much misinformation you've been given. But you wouldn't know this unless you were listening to the right people. And there are a lot of people over the internet that are just, they're either agent provocateurs or really irresponsible because of misinformation galore. Dr. Piers Robinson is telling you the truth. It's a short clip. Most of it's about his background. I want to show you his qualifications. I could edit that out. I chose not to. But listen what he has to say. It ties right into Aldous Huxley, ties right into to Orwell's concept of the lie is the truth, and war is peace, and everything's its opposite. And listen carefully.
Well, the short answer to that, to what extent, to a very great extent, propaganda has been part and parcel of the policies which have been used to respond to COVID-19. It wouldn't be an underestimation to say that this is probably one of the biggest propaganda operations that we've seen in history because of the global nature. And because of the resources put into it. But it's been very extensive. And I mean, perhaps before anyone thinks this is wild speculation, it was pretty clear from the beginning that propaganda was being employed. And so in the UK, the Spy B, the Behavioural Psychologist Advisory Board, who advised governments, documents which they had produced came out, which talked about use of the media to increase fear levels amongst the public. and also talking about a range of incentivization and coercive measures used to try to get people to support or buy into lockdown and so on. That came out very early on, those documents in the UK context. Other very, very clear indicators that sort of propaganda was being employed was the fact that very early on, big tech, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, agreed to come on board with censoring various arguments against lockdown, for example, and people questioning COVID-19. And that was done, you know, above board in a sense. And in the UK, you had Ofcom, the broadcast regulator, actually, you know, specifying that, broadcast media needed to stay in line with advice from the government. And this all came out, you know, fairly early on during the pandemic. And obviously, from the point of view of the governments, on one level at least, this was seen as, well, when we have a major crisis, or what was perceived as a major crisis, and we have to pursue these propagandistic methods in order to deal with it. And I guess that's the kind of sort of the justification for it initially. But over time, I mean, the propaganda, I think, is becoming increasingly clear to increasing numbers of people that the propaganda has, you know, really presented a very distorted understanding of what's going on, and has allowed what can only be described as very extraordinary measures, locking down whole societies for long periods of time. Now this drive to vaccinate not just vulnerable groups, but to vaccinate everybody. And threats, obviously, of mandating vaccination for people, even children. And if you were to describe those scenarios to anyone a couple of years ago, they said this is extraordinary, that this is being sort of pushed and promoted in this context in relation to, you know, what's now an endemic seasonal respiratory virus. And it's very clear. I mean, there's you know, in time, more evidence will be pulled out. But I don't think there's any dispute now that, propaganda has played a key role in shaping the minds of people and their understanding of the virus and of underpinning.
Okay. Who is he? Dr. Piers Robinson is an expert in communications, media, and world politics. He focuses on conflict and war, and especially the role of propaganda. He's presently co-director of the Organization for Propaganda Studies, and he is also one of the convenors on working group on Syria, meaning he tells the truth about how Obama and Clinton and everyone else falsified intelligence data to justify going into Syria and arming the rebels, who were terrorists, but are terrorists. And also he is with a working group on propaganda and the 9/11 war on terror. He's a professor, was a professor and chairman of the Department of Politics, Society, and Political Journalism at the University of Sheffield. He also served on the boards of several academic journals. He lectured at NATO Defense College in Rome and briefed senior United Kingdom military commanders and diplomats, and his research interests focus on organized persuasion communication and contemporary propaganda. So he is a person who knows what he's talking about. When you're a chairman of a department, when you're a tenured professor, and when you're now talking about, you heard what he said, this is the major propaganda of our time, that everything you're hearing now is propaganda, not science. And so for all the people at the beginning of the show who talked about trust the science, okay, let's trust the science. I don't have a problem with that. But tell me the outcome. Mercury amalgam fillings, fluoridation in dental care, the standard American diet. Now, I know that very well because Senator McGovern contacted me and asked me, would I create a food pyramid that could be used, and I sent it with all the scientific documentation, and it excluded meat and minimized dairy and grains, legumes, beans, nuts, and seeds, tubers, leafy and starchy vegetables represented the majority of it. Sugar wasn't on there at all. And at the last moment, on the last day, I was called and told, I'm sorry, but the people who control the USDA, the dairy industry, the egg industry, the Cattlemen's Association, the refined confection, all these people got it changed back. So that's science. Corrupt science, but that's your standard American diet. That's what all the dietitians, I am a registered dietitian, and so all the dietitians learn that the standard American diet is just fine. That's maybe why 50,000 died from malnutrition in 1 year, and that was due to the dietitians making the wrong foods. How about the benefits of smoking? Remember, for 50 years, the American Medical Association had full-page ads in its journal about Lucky Strikes and Chesterfields and soothing your throat, and more doctors smoke this than any others. Yeah, that's good science, I guess. The benefits of smoking. How about the benefits of alcohol? How about diethylstilbestrol, DES? How about the BCG, the recombinant bovine growth hormone in dairy products? How about genetically modified safety, like glyphosate? That's safe, isn't it? Yeah, science says it's safe. Oh, until it was not safe when we uncovered all the documents, and Robert Kennedy Jr. was also part of that, and now they've had to acknowledge how unsafe it is, still being sold. How about asbestos? How about DDT and Agent Orange and neonicotinoids? How about the emissions from coal power plants? We were told by science, not a problem. How about synthetic hormone replacement therapy that 10 million American women take every day, leading to a 13% increase in heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia? No problem there. How about artificial dyes and food colorings and preservatives? How about the SSRI drugs? We know now that they're mostly placebo, Prozac, Zoloft, Effexor. Yeah, Ritalin. How about mammographies? How about aluminum as vaccine adjuvants, mercury as vaccine preservatives, polio vaccine with SV40 that they knew at the time, Maurice Hilleman knew at the time that it was contaminated with the simian virus 40 out of monkeys, green tea monkey, kidney cells, that could cause cancer because it did in the animals, and yet he let it go through. I played that clip on my show. How about the Sailor or Lyme pertussis vaccine? How about the human papilloma vaccine? How about the safety of hydrofracking? We were told the chemicals not going to cause a problem to the environment or to people. They had scientists. How about nuclear power? Not a problem. Clean energy doesn't pollute. How about the depleted uranium and the veterans that were exposed to it? One of those people went over from the Pentagon to see whether or not depleted uranium was a problem. His name was Dr. Doug Rocky. He was a friend, just passed this year. And what about the artificial sweeteners, aspartame, saccharin, cyclamates? How about the safety of parabens or preservatives used in cosmetics and food and beverages and drugs? How about the safety of phthalates, chemicals used in making plastic and used in soaps and shampoos and detergents and vinyl floors and lubricating oils? How about the safety of flame retardant chemicals? How about the safety of electromagnetic frequencies and Wi-Fi and long mobile phone use? How about behavioral psychology and drug-based psychiatry? How about the good science behind lobotomies and electroconvulsive therapy? And then look at COVID. How about the great science behind the PCR test as a gold standard and reporting inflated figures and deaths from SARS infections and COVID vaccine efficacy and safety, the efficacy of masks, the controversy of drugs to treat SARS infection, and the denial of all alternative therapies or orthodox therapies like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, our monoclonal antibodies. Yeah. Everything I just mentioned, science, time and again before Congress and always in the media, showed that we're the scientists, trust in us. And we did. And look at the outcome. And that's just 0.1% of what I've reported over the last 55 years of my career. And in the end, we have been right on every single issue involving public health, and they've been wrong. Yet they're the ones who still are believed. What about that? But that's how it works. Oh, and by the way, do not be concerned with 12,791 deaths, 16,044 permanent disabilities, 70,666 emergency room visits, 51,240 hospitalizations, 13,139 life-threatening events among 682,863 reported injuries from the vaccine in the United States, and that's 1%. So you're really looking at over 100,000 deaths. Or in the United Kingdom, 1,559 deaths, 1,135,000 injuries. No. Or even the European Union, 20,595 deaths, 1,960,607 injuries, for total, conservatively, 34,946,000 deaths, 3,779,057 injuries, and a lot of those permanent. So, can anyone in this room mention, or this listening audience, mention any drug that has been approved that had, in just this short period of time, almost 4 million injuries and 35,000 deaths? And that's a very conservative figure, and it was still promoted without any challenge by the mainstream media or scientific community or government regulatory agencies. So, yeah, trust science. Yeah. Not going to. Individuals who challenge and have a different approach, yes. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from a person, a full hour tonight, by the way, on one of the most honest and courageous scientists and medical doctors in the world. And he is testifying before a Senate committee, and it's recent. And you're going to hear some strong things. Now, mind you, he tends to be very conservative in his statements. He has an outstanding reputation, blemish-free, sits on multiple government boards. You can hear his bio. And he is the most cited scientist on PubMed in the world. Last time I checked, it was, I think, somewhere between 600 and 700 citations. He's published over 40 articles on COVID and how to save lives, giving the truth. We're going to hear from him tonight. We're going to hear from him for a whole hour. But we'll hear a short version of it in a few moments. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
At the onset of the pandemic in March of 2020, I became very quickly involved with other physicians at my medical center in organizing one of the first prophylactic protocols using hydroxychloroquine. And over the course of a weekend, we worked with the U.S. FDA. We had an investigational new drug application approved. We had internal grant funding. And we put everything together very quickly in order to help protect the workers in our healthcare system. And things seemed to be going great in March. But as we moved into April and May, I noticed a disturbing trend, and the trend was no effort to treat patients who were sick with COVID-19 at home or in nursing homes, and it almost seemed as if patients were intentionally not being treated, allowed to sicken at home and get to the point where they couldn't breathe and then be admitted to the hospital. And it just seemed, it's like such an unusual response. If this had been any other form of pneumonia, respiratory illness, or any other illness in the human body where, as an infection, if we start early, we can actually treat much more easily than wait until patients are very sick. And we learned quickly that it takes about 2 weeks for someone to get sick enough at home to require hospitalization. And we learned within a couple of weeks or months that there were three major parts of the illness. The virus was replicating for as long as 2 weeks. There was incredible inflammation in the body, and then blood clotting. So I think most doctors, including myself, understood a single drug was not going to be enough to treat this illness. We had to use drugs in combination. And so what I did is, I have to tell you, as I was watching TV, the White House Task Force One and other people who got involved, as well as other local and institutional officials, no one said that hospitalizations and deaths were the bad outcome of COVID-19. And that they were going to put together a team of doctors to stop these hospitalizations and deaths. And after a couple of months went by, I have to tell you, I think I may have been one of the few people in the nation to say that. I said, listen, I am not going to tolerate that. I'm not going to tolerate that in my practice, And I'm not going to tolerate that on a national or worldwide level. And so I reached out to the Italians who were doing great work. They were getting bombed in Milan. I had friends down in Siena. We worked with the Coracle Network, communicating rapidly, saying what drugs are working, what drugs are not working, how can we actually start to use drugs in combination. And then by July 1st, we had our first protocol based on signals of benefit and acceptable safety that was submitted to the American Journal of Medicine. Within 30 days, it was published electronically, and that paper titled The Pathophysiologic Basis and Clinical Rationale for Early Ambulatory Treatment of COVID-19 quickly became the most downloaded paper to help doctors in the world treat COVID-19. And it was based on three principles. We're going to use medications to slow down the virus. We're going to use medications to basically attenuate or reduce inflammation. And then lastly, we're going to address blood clotting. And very quickly, we had great deliverance from Operation Warp Speed. We had monoclonal antibodies that were high tech. They were fully FDA, EUA approved. We had data come on with ivermectin, another drug that was actually those in Bangladesh and elsewhere were working with that looked terrific. The Canadians came on with colchicine in a high-quality trial based on an initial Greek trial. And then we learned more from experts at UCLA and elsewhere with respect to blood clotting and the need for aspirin and blood thinners. So in December of 2020, in a dedicated supplemental issue of Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine, the second paper was published. It was titled Sequence Multidrug Therapy for Early Ambulatory Treatment of COVID-19, and it involved the full breadth of drugs that we have available today, including the EUA monoclonal antibodies, including oral antivirals. By that time, we were supported by over 200 studies with hydroxychloroquine, 60 studies with ivermectin. We combine with doxycycline, azithromycin. We are supported by a meta-analysis using steroids. We could use simple prednisone, widely available, supported by two studies with inhaled budesonide, a very large study with colchicine. And then finally, we had observational data from in the hospital on full-dose aspirin and full-dose anticoagulation with low molecular heparin. Now, that's a lot to digest for your listeners, but I can tell you, doctors can work with drugs, 4 to 6 drugs in combination.
A full hour with all the details and protocols tonight, Progressive Commentary Hour at 7 o'clock. Before I go to a commentary, let me just mention that I have a special today. Five different bags of the Superfood Breakfast, the Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing, and the multi-award-winning documentary, The Cost of Denial. All that, normally $147.91, yours for only $73. You're saving $73. That's a 50% discount. And just so you know, this cereal, I take it everywhere. It's got the steel-cut oatmeal, the oat fiber, the coconut oil, the brown rice protein, the flax seeds, the almond butter, protein, the coconut, bananas, green bananas, vanilla, blueberries, pomegranates, acai, acerola, apples, bilberry, cherries, cranberries, goji berries, grapes, grapeseed extract, papaya, watermelon, barley grass, parsley, spinach, carrots, pineapple, spirulina, radishes, celery, onions, collard greens, kale, asparagus, broccoli, sprouts, and cauliflower, cabbage, broccoli, all in there. It is a phenomenal product. It's giving you a really good quality protein per serving, and you're getting 60 servings, 60, right? So this is a whole grains, plant-based protein, fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds. It took me over 6 months to make this taste delicious by disguising the flavor of the onion, which is very strong, and the kale and a few other things, and asparagus, but I did it. So now you get the most delicious breakfast. 18 fruits, 16 vegetables, high-quality protein, and good quality fiber, and you're getting the Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing. You name the disease, it's in there, and all the details of traditional and alternative treatments. So everybody should have that. That's an absolute must, and then, of course, the most winning documentary in the world this year at film festivals, The Cost of Denial. And that is one that you don't want to miss. So that's how that's our special. And how do you get it? Simple. I'll give you a number to call. Just call this number for this breakfast special. Huge savings, 50% savings. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or call Neil in our vitamin closet at 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. Because people are always asking, I want this, I want that. So we gave them something really good. Last week, I shared insights on what was wrong with just accepting science, especially what has happened with the Church of Science today called Scientism. It's like a dogmatic cult. It's based upon scientific materialism. There is no room in that for belief, faith, energy, none of that. And yet that is the basis of all life. What is the only thing that's missing when you die? Your energy. What is the only thing that allows you to live? Your energy. So the very thing that we cannot create, energy, nor destroy, energy, only change how it's used, we never talk about it. At best, human biology and medicine, as they're practiced by most today, are what we call the soft sciences. They lack the rigor of the hard sciences like physics, inorganic chemistry, engineering, and mathematics. But we trust only that. And those are the people who tell us, the PCR test is right. No, they're wrong. And tomorrow I'm going to play you the clip from the man who invented it in a conversation we had where he challenges this whole notion. So what I want to do today is I want to talk about the absurd irony is that if one were to ask a random sampling of 1,000 federal health officials and scientists and physicians and clinicians and drug company executives and university medical school professors and deans of departments to explain the actual mind-body mechanisms contributing to the placebo effect, they wouldn't be able to. They'd just say, placebo effect is just, it's an anomaly. No, it is a phenomena. It's like smiling. And people smile back, loving, and people feel the energy, being hostile and negative, and you feel that hostile negative energy, projecting as if you're a victim about everything, and people don't want anything to do with you. Do you ever wonder why some people wake up in the morning and they have no friends, nobody wants to be around them? Maybe you're just acting inappropriate. Oh, no, but the person who is the person who wants to always control their image never wants to accept that they're at fault. Energy is what tells us more about a person than anything they can tell us verbally. A recent anomaly during the current COVID-19 vaccine trials last autumn violates conventional standards. The placebo group were not carried through to their full conclusion. Contrary to common sense in clinical trial protocols, placebo participants were vaccinated long before the trials were completed, meaning those that were in the placebo group getting a saline solution, they actually later were told, you were the placebo group. Well, not wanting to, contract COVID, they went ahead and got the vaccine. Well, then how in the world did the media miss that story? And can you just say, they're safe and effective? How do you know they're safe when you have over almost 50,000 known dead and you have millions injured, many permanently? How can you say it's safe? It wasn't for those people. And how can you say it's effective when we haven't had the long-term outcome yet, the microplatelet aggregation, the micro strokes, the micro blood clots, not the big ones, the small ones. Yeah, and some of this stuff will take a year to 2 years to 3 years to manifest. As we make efforts to unravel the trail of contradictions and often the outright lies promulgated by our medical authorities regarding mass vaccine mandates, irresponsible diagnostic testing with imprecise tools to identify a viral infection, we may heed MIT's Thomas Kahn's analysis of dominant paradigms within the sciences and their tendency towards dogmatic and authoritarian control. in order to understand the truth or falsehood of the government's medical declarations, the very nature of these authoritarian voices should be investigated. What values do they hold? What are the boundaries between what they tolerate and what they disdain? In our opinion, the official COVID narrative's boundaries are exceedingly narrow, compartmentalized, and heavily attired with grotesque armor forged by religious-like faith and zeal, and repeated by people who do not understand either science, healing, or medicine, or public health issues, but they're good foot soldiers. Propagandize them, condition them, and they'll tell a lie without blinking. Repeatedly, we note that Fauci's pogroms against alternative viral therapies by frontline doctors and medical experts who are providing sound evidence about the COVID vaccine's risks of long-term injury and death are blatantly American Eurocentric. China, for example, regularly prescribes traditional Chinese medical treatments against SARS-2 infections, as do many other countries with strong traditional medical systems. Frequently, medical research laboratories and medical schools outside the American Euro arena are discovering natural molecules both for prevention and treatment. Worldwide, there are nations that require treating COVID patients with ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc, vitamin D, vitamin C, and other safe drugs and supplements. But such promising and cheaper alternatives that comprise the CDC and Wall Street's interest in the drug industry are categorically ignored or ridiculed or attacked. So how is it that Dr. McCullough and thousands of other mainstream board-certified pro-vaccine doctors are saying we're using these medications and saving lives? Upwards of 85% of all deaths. That's over 3 million Americans could be, and people worldwide could be alive today. But Fauci, Gates, and others couldn't profit from that. They couldn't control the direction and the narrative, so they rejected this. This highlights one sharp distinction between dependable research and real science and everything else which is pseudoscientific fraud that might explain Washington's frequent ridiculous decisions and its aggressive public relations endeavors to silence medical opponents. Their reactive diatribes, which either brazenly or casually advocate for censorship, contribute nothing constructive to the medical arts. Rather, it makes us all the less wise and naive. For the younger generation of future physicians and medical researchers, be cautioned. Caveat emptor. Consumer beware. You're entering a field that is half propaganda, and the other half, the ability to understand what your role is, and you're a part of a team. It is called Big Pharma's team. Stay in line, you're rewarded with phenomenal inducements. Challenge them, you're attacked, and your career is over. It is coercive brainwashing into a materialistic creed that once found a home in the USSR, but now is blatant and common in the United States. Leninist and especially Stalinist science, too, made efforts to institute strict legislative control over the areas of scientific research permitted at Soviet technological and medical institutions. For example, Linus Pauling's theory of resonating structures earned him a Nobel Prize. However, the Soviet scientific bureaucracy ruled the theory as bourgeois pseudoscience. Today, of course, resonance is no longer questioned, and it's a standard entry in science's lexicon. Starting in 1949, the anti-resonance campaign arose to force Soviet supporters of the theory of to confess their ideological sins in these public show trials. Do we not now have every single night in cable news and the mainstream, NBC and CBS and ABC and the New York Times, do we not have these show trials, but they're not Stalinist? They're now corporatist show trials. Show your allegiance to the woke culture. Show your allegiance that you believe in what we tell you and nothing else and nothing less. Any scientific theory that hinted at idealism was censored then and is censored now. In order to advance their science within the limited confines of a materialistic ideology, Soviet scientists had to creatively invent new definitions. We are again witnessing a similar practice as the CDC redefines the very definitions of a vaccine and the parameters of vaccine efficacy in order to fit its economic and political agendas, and these redefinitions have little plausible basis, in fact, no basis in reality. The Soviet example serves as a dire public warning against the growing influence of radicalized and dogmatic scientific materialists in the United States. These included groups that identify themselves as skeptics, everyone on Wikipedia, yes, and those foolish enough to use Facebook and Google and Twitter. I don't use any of those crappy little sites. Anti-intellectual, anti-truth, pure propaganda. Leading proponents of the American Medical Fundamentalist Project, particularly outspoken skeptics, these are the individuals who are today's army of internet trolls. They give their support to the Fauci Manifesto and frequently come to defense of the nation's most rabid vaccine proponents, such as California State Senator Richard Pan and New York's former governor, Andrew Cuomo. Skeptic platforms and its penetration into the mainstream media is our nation's version of Soviet grassroots movements to banish critical scientific voices questioning the state-sanctioned narrative. More recently, discussions commenced to launch a Stalinist-style campaign to reprimand physicians for holding medical views and opinions contrary to the Fauci Manifesto. Last month, the Federation of State Medical Boards, the umbrella organization representing all U.S. state boards, issued a statement that doctors could lose their medical license for communicating misinformation about the pandemic without further definition. Who determines what's misinformation? As I mentioned at the beginning of this program, is it the same individual who was a part of the Fauci clique that worked with Wuhan and gain-of-function research and the people over at the University of North Carolina? Is that the people that you should trust? University of Southern California chemistry professor Anna Krioff remembers her education studying quantum physics in Moscow under the Soviet regime. She recounts the censorship and horrible fate of scientists who dared to follow the path of reliable scientific inquiry, which demanded an unbiased and objective evaluation of the phenomena under investigation. Textbooks and scientific papers, she recalled, tirelessly emphasized the priority and preeminence of Russia and Soviet science. Today, our American science only differs in that it's been thoroughly mutilated by corporate interest and greed. Instead of a political ideology seeking world domination, in her article appearing in the Journal of Physical and Chemistry, she writes, quote, "The USSR is no longer on the map, but I find myself experiencing its legacy some thousands of miles to the west, as if I'm living in a Norwegian twilight zone. I witness ever-increasing attempts to subject science and education to ideological control and censorship. Just as in the Soviet times, the censorship is being justified by the greater good." Yes, it is doubtful that our federal health agencies and leaders, nor the corporate media interest the agencies bed with, are consciously aware that they are following the Soviet script. They're just not that bright. As in the USSR, they plot behavioral schemes to seduce the American public to give obedience to a perverted medical system erected with straw and mud in order to keep the pseudoscience of masks, unproven patented drugs, and vaccines front and center. Our medical bureaucracy, with the support of Silicon Valley and the mainstream media, has few options but to purge its critics. Yes, like the fictional movie The Purge, we have a real-world purge headed by the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, Congress, the White House. It is a familiar pattern that has reenacted itself during the Church's investigations and Inquisition, the Nazi Germany manifestos, Mao's China, and the McCarthy era. It is being revived again as the CDC and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases seek to realize Thomas Huxley's dream of a church scientific and take its seat on the throne of a politicized dictatorate of medicine. But in conclusion, by now, there is no longer a secret that coercive propaganda was being employed very early on during the pandemic. According to released documents, Sage Behavioral Psychoanalysis advising the UK government, according to Piers Robinson, whose clip I played earlier in the program, co-director of the organization Propaganda Studies, recommended, quote, "the use of the media to increase fear levels amongst the public and talk coercive measures to use to get people to buy into lockdowns," end quote. And before the documents were obtained, the names of the COVID pandemic committee members were kept secret. Other measures to covertly persuade and control the British public included education, incentivization, training, restrictions, and environmental restructuring. Of course, none of these efforts would have succeeded without the capture of mainstream media acting in full compliance as a lapdog, especially the BBC with the government's political overreach. And let there be no mistake, the U.S. health agencies and British health authorities work in lockstep. Federal health officials escape respectable journalists, and they do not have that opportunity. They only can discuss any issue with people they know are going to be compliant. Consequently, it is difficult for the average American to agree with or disapprove the official narrative. This is a classical behavior indoctrination at its worst. In essence, genuine science seeks objective, independent scientific consensus, regardless whether a truth is aligned with personal values or beliefs. At this moment, numerous orthodox physicians and medical researchers are coming forward to give a very credible evidence to challenge and devalue the U.S. government's campaign to vaccinate the population without exception. This is an important battle, and it's not being waged by conventional versus alternative medical systems. It is an uprising within the ranks of the medical establishment, the first in our history. Tens of thousands of professional critics are conventional doctors whose careers were never antagonistic to the value of medicine and vaccines. They have always acted as devoted comrades in the ruling medical establishment. Not today. They are seeing the benefits of ivermectin. They are seeing the benefits of inexpensive, proven drugs. Unlike Fauci and the bureaucratic elite who sit at his table, most have actually treated infected COVID patients and are now witnessing the carnage from mass vaccination. The Fauci Manifesto, on the other hand, clutches desperately to a dogmatic belief that refuses to consider contrary evidence. Its authoritarian control over the media airwaves doesn't permit the manifesto to introspectively evaluate whether its policies may be spurious or downright counterfeit. It is anti-scientific in all of its claims, but that's where we're at. And that's why we have supercilious morons like Boris Johnson, Trudeau, Merkel, and so many others, and they are the ones who are launching the Great Reset, quote, to build back better. No, we're not that foolish. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.